A warning. This podcast contains adult language, accounts of sexual abuse, suicidal thoughts, and other deeply sensitive material. Please use discretion. Previously on Terminal, The Dying Church Planter. Sometimes the worst that could happen happens.
I don't know how to say this. The proper term would be rape.
And then sometimes, the worst that could happen, happens again.
I come home from school, get off the bus, and my mom tells me that Mikey, who was my older cousin, had just hung himself. That was my best friend.
After he was sexually molested, after his best friend committed suicide, Richard Pope asked himself, how much can one person take? And the answer was, not this much.
So I ran away. And I was like, if I can get far enough away, I can die.
The worst that could happen happened to young Richard again and again. So he tried once, then he tried twice to end his life.
I literally remember putting knife to arm and I'm just like, go in. Like, I wanted to destroy myself, but something kept ruining my plans.
Something or someone.
Ugh, yeah, man. There's just so much even before the cancer. This is a lot, man.
I'm Tony Hudson, and this is Terminal, The Dying Church Planter. Episode 3, Love Stories. There is no venom like teenager venom. Everyone knew what Richard did. Everyone knew that he'd run away. He'd hidden in a swamp, and he'd tried to kill himself. And so several months later, after he was released from the mental health facility, where he'd been taken after his second suicide attempt, Richard Pope discovered his classmates at Sussex Technical High School had given him a nickname. They called him Swamp Monster.
I'm bullied relentlessly because everybody's like, oh, you're the kid that ran into the woods. So nobody liked me. All my friends thought I was a loser now because like everyone knew what I had tried to do. They're like, oh, what are you, swamp monster? How twisted. How sad. And I remember what Miss Ruthie, Grandma Ruthie said. Stare the monster in the face. So I would do this. Like Tony, I'm looking, I would just stare at them, right? But something was different.
Everyone knew what happened to Richard in the swamp, but no one knew what happened to him after that. No one at Sussex Technical High School in Georgetown, Delaware, knew what happened when Richard Pope met a kid named Harold.
I'm working at a burger shop in Millsboro, Delaware, and I'm working there, and there's this kid who gets hired. He's a year older than me. He gets hired right after me, and he's like, loves Jesus, like sickeningly, like grossly loves Jesus. Like, I'd be like, man, beep, this kid wants extra pickles, man, beep. And I'm like, he's like, hey, Richard, that kid's made in the image of God. Like, just like, what is wrong with you, dude? Like, stop. He just would not leave me alone. And I would like call him names and I would like snap and be like, yo, beep you, bro, beep. I'd hit him with spatulas, like I'd actually hit this kid. And he'd be like, hey, it's okay. If hitting me makes you feel better, do it. Just know that you're never gonna feel better from hitting me. You need to know Jesus. Like, and I'd be like, what is wrong with you? I just like smacked you in the face with a spatula. Like literally hot burger grease is on you. And he'd be like, it's fine, I have acne scars anyway. Like he'd make jokes about it. I'd be like, dude, just radical grace. Like radically graceful and kind to me. So just, yeah, I had a really bad day. Snapped out, threw a spatula at the grill, freaked out, walk into the back freezer. And I'm sitting on a box of burgers and I'm just like crying. He walks in there and he's like, hey, I love you. And I'm like, why? And it just hit me. I'm like, why are you telling me you love me right now? And he said, I love you because Jesus loves you and Jesus loves me. And Jesus wants me to love you. So he never actually gave me all the divine answers to how God works. That's not what I needed. I needed to see that there was something greater than my idols and I need to know that there was hope. And I never would have believed him if he said that. So what did he do? He modeled it. He loved me when I was a jerk. And it's so simple, right? Like I feel like the hardest people to lead to Jesus are people who think they're smart. And I definitely thought I was smart, right? Like I was reading philosophy. Like I was reading Aristotle when I was like eighth grade because it was fun. And I knew the stuff. I knew what he was trying to do. I knew he was trying to convert me. And I had no defense to that because it was genuine. He 100% meant it. And here's what blew my mind. Never once did he look away from me. So I go to church with him that Sunday. And they preached a message on God's ability to change things. And he's like, maybe you've lied. Maybe you've stolen. Hey, maybe things have been done to you. Maybe you've been raped. He said it. And it was like, that's me. And he's like, your pain is in Christ. And Christ has felt that pain. But you don't see the sin on Jesus. He's white as snow. And he took all your pain. So, yeah. He led me to Jesus. Got baptized 2 weeks later. And all of a sudden, my heart, like literally that first 2 weeks of high school, my junior year, these kids were bullying me. So I decided somewhere in my young, new believer heart that I was going to love these people so much that they would stop being mean to me. And it worked. I mean, not everybody liked me, but you could insult me and they did. And they'd say swamp moss or whatever. I would just stare at them. I'd be like, I'm so sorry you feel that way. I love you. I might not feel it, but I'm choosing to. I am choosing to love you. And I had so much more joy and peace because now I had this component and it wasn't about like waging war with them. It was about loving them. And it was about Jesus loving me. Does that make sense?
There was now and there will forever be a before and an after for Richard Pope. There was everything that happened before Jesus, and then there was everything that happened after Jesus. A local church took Richard on as an intern. He studied the Bible. He learned all he could about ministry. He fell more in love with Jesus, and he fell in love with a girl.
Spell your name for me.
Peyton, P-A-Y-T-O-N.
And your last name?
Pope, P-O-P-E. Let's think about it.
That's not that hard.
Yeah,
a word.
No,
that's not that hard a word.
It's a new name, so I'm still getting used to it.
I understand. Were you one of those people that like practice saying your new name over and over again?
Oh, yeah, before the wedding.
Writing it in little hearts, yeah. You know, on paper.
The O's a heart. P, heart, P.
When he was 19 years old, Richard Pope met Peyton Shirey. They had actually crossed paths once before.
She was a senior in high school and I was a freshman, and I was trying to find a math class.
But that was another time and another place.
So now I'm like serving at this church, learning ministry, still learning how to follow Jesus. And she grew up in that church and we developed a friendship. And she was teaching the middle school class on Sunday morning. So she'd call me and ask me Bible questions, and it literally was just Bible questions. And then it was like, hey, you wanna hang out? So then we went to Hardee's. It's a truck stop with a Hardee's in it. We just hung out, man, and we just kept hanging out, and we became really, really good friends. And then she told me she liked me, and I was like, yes.
What attracted you to Richard?
I know it's a cliche answer, but really how much he loved Jesus.
You're right, that is a cliche.
It's a very cliche answer, but it really is just when you're in your early 20s and guys in your early 20s are being goofballs, and this guy really has a direction in life and just really loves the Lord, and if I was going to be with a guy, I wanted it to be somebody who loves Jesus.
A relationship that began at a truck stop Hardee's proceeded in as unconventional a manner as you might expect. Meaning Richard and Peyton didn't talk about things other dating couples talked about.
We both felt the call to do ministry to reach certain types of people. Like I really, really mesh well with your young professional. You're 20-something. And she was called to reach the abstract, artistic people who have gone far from the church. And when we started dating, she's like, how do we do that? And I was like, we plant a church.
I had never heard the term church plant, and I didn't know what that meant. But church plants bring in non-believers. And so when he explained all that, we just would daydream about it. How it is a new and exciting thing that someone who doesn't know God would be attracted to in Salisbury.
Salisbury, Maryland, population 33,863, is 106 miles east of Baltimore. It has a zoo, a shopping mall, a professional roller derby team, three colleges, and not nearly enough churches.
Salisbury is called the crossroads of Delmarva. So Delmarva is Delaware, Eastern Shore, Maryland, and then Virginia, like that that eastern, northeastern, yeah, like Chesapeake area. And Salisbury has constantly been one of the top fastest growing cities in America. Like, it's just like this old, decrepit industrial town that has become this robust, artistic, young community. So there's already churches in Salisbury. Why plant more churches? Jesus said in Luke 19:10, "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." There's this picture when he says that of going somewhere, right? And finding and like saving. I think church planting just reminds us of that very simple rhythm. Jesus came to a people and he saved them. So why do we need to plant more churches? Because God told us to, right? It's not optional. He said, go make disciples. And I think church planting is engaging lost people in your city, turning them into followers of Jesus, and then walking with them through what followers of Jesus should do. So one, we plant churches because Jesus told us to. Two, we plant churches because that's the model we see in the early church in the book of Acts. Different people went to different places to plant different kinds of churches. I love NAMM's thing, Sun Network's thing, planting churches everywhere for everyone, right? There needs to be a church for the artists in Salisbury, and there needs to be a church for the young family in Salisbury.
And so that is why, on March 7th, 2020, Mr. Richard Pope and Miss Peyton Shirie, for better, for worse, and in sickness and in health, were not just united in holy matrimony, but were sent out to do something holy.
I already knew and felt the call to plant a church. And I was like, hey, if you marry me, we're going to be planting a church. So when we finally got married, it wasn't just celebrating a marriage. It was also like, go out into the world. It was like the Great Commission and our wedding ceremony were together. And most wives would be like, oh, that's kind of, But I don't know. I think Peyton has this really high view of calling. So yeah, literally in her wedding vows, she said, I promise to love you and support you as you plant the church God has called you to plant and stand beside you while you do it. And that was like, that's pretty not normal for someone to say that in their wedding vows.
It was a church planter's wedding. And I'm so glad we did it the way that we did it.
What'd you say in your marriage vows?
I remember telling him that he has really awesome shoes and that I'm looking forward to him cooking for me. And I know he sent something about that too, but I remember just really talking about our call to ministry, wherever God called him, that I just definitely felt called to be by his side and to be a spouse to him, no matter what.
No one really knows exactly what they're signing up for when they say, I love you no matter what. And yet Richard and Peyton Pope assumed what happened after their wedding would have to be more manageable than what had happened before their wedding.
So in 2018, me and Peyton are dating. And me, her, and a couple other people were like, man, we should start a church. So we started having monthly gatherings. And I didn't know anything about planning a church. We had no money, no partnership, no funding. So my cancer comes back for the second time, and it was a lot worse. The treatment was worse, honestly, but we still had the monthly gatherings. They shrunk down to like 20 people, then 10 people, and they just didn't work.
That is what came before Richard and Peyton's wedding day, March 7th, 2020. And then this is what came immediately after.
Yeah, so we went on our honeymoon, and it was great. We didn't want to travel super far, and so we went to D.C. We spent a week in D.C., almost a week. And so then COVID happened. And so after that, we just kind of had a lot to think about.
So we got married on March 7th of 2020, which is like a week before COVID shut everything down. So I'm living in my like 600 square foot apartment with Peyton. And like, what is life? And she's a teacher. So she's teaching on Zoom for like an hour a day and then doing calls with kids and parents. It was just such a weird time. And I'm like, man, I don't have any income and we're married and I'm a bum. And the church plant failed already. And I'm like, what am I even doing? I don't even know how to plant a church. We had nobody. So I started applying to jobs. Some of those jobs at churches. And I got offered jobs at churches. Lead pastor jobs. Where they're going to let a 22-year-old just, all I had to do was preach. Establish church. And Peyton was like, no, we're called to plant a church. You're not doing that. I mean, like, man, it was like, I thought she was gonna drive a pike through my head. You know what I mean? Like, it was like a biblical intensity to her. She's like, no, that's not what you're called to do. You're called to plant a church. So I'm like, well, we gotta raise money for my salary. Like, I need to have a salary. So we created this long list and we messaged everybody we knew, asking if we could meet with them and talk to them about what God was doing in our lives. That's one of many times where my faith was very small. I was terrified because for like me, there was nothing to show for myself. Like, hell, can you give me money if I can have a job? So, yeah. Cancer's back. And I feel like a failure. What do I do?
Richard Pope was sick and sad and struck down. But this time, he was not destroyed. This time, he and Peyton decided they would take a slightly modified version of Grandma Ruthie's advice, and they would look all their monsters in the face, the only way they knew how.
We are going to pray the biggest prayers possible, and then we're going to go and tell people about our God, and we're going to wait. We're going to pray crazy big prayers, and then we're going to sit there, but we're not going to sit and do nothing. We're going to move in faithful obedience, trusting that God's going to do what he's going to do.
It's crazy how sometimes when someone makes a bold prayer like that, we're stunned when God actually answers. Sometimes we're so stunned, we make a podcast about it.
Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God.
Coming up on episode 4 of Terminal, The Dying Church Planter. In the beginning, there was one person.
It really clicked with me. Like, it was like, holy cow, this is real.
And then there was another, and another, and another.
Just scrolling through Facebook one day, just mindless, not even thinking about what I was looking at. And then bam.
And then finally, there was a broken man standing in front of all those people, giving them a license to walk away.
I said to them, if you want me to do this, I will. But if you guys don't want to do it, then it's done.
That's on the next episode of Terminal, The Dying Church Planter.
Never-ending, reckless love of God.
You can find photos, videos, and other bonus material. And you can learn more about church planting with Send Network at terminalchurchplanter.com.